Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone.
WEBI Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and joining me on the Commons today, we have Nancy Henschel. Nancy lives in Sugarland, Texas. She owns actually three houses in an HOA, plus one in Arizona that's not in an HOA. And she's got some interesting observations on how the two communities, I hate to use the word community, Nancy, when dealing with an HOA place, but the two neighborhoods, how they differ. And she's got a terrific website, but we'll find out all about that. Nancy, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure.
Tell me a little bit about how you ended up in Sugarland, Texas, and how you ended up buying not one, but three houses in an HOA.
Well, Sue, it shouldn't be as complicated as it sounds, but let me tell you, the three homes in Sugarland, they're each in a different HOA. So, that really gives me a spread to figure out. The first one we bought, we moved from Massachusetts, and we were told, about the HOA. We were told that, you know, if you don't plan on painting your house purple, you'll be fine, and that's all there is to it. And we went on that belief and really didn't run into a problem for 9 years. And then the awakening occurred. Now, we ended up with the other two because about 3 or 4 years after we bought our first one, we ran into a situation with our loss of capital gains. So we ended up trading the house in Massachusetts for two of the houses, both in two different HOAs in Sugarland. So I'm actually a member of three different HOAs in Sugarland, and it's been an amazing struggle, but also an awareness of how they differ. The one that we live in is actually not run officially by the Community Associations Institute. And the other two are.
Oh, I like the way you put that one, Nancy. OCAI's got their fingers in just about every pie, don't they?
Well, up to the elbows.
Yeah, up to their chinny chin chins, as my mother used to say. And so you're dealing with three different boards.
Right.
Three different sets of covenants.
Well, now, Sue, this is also an interesting reality here. Although the boards are different, people that are owned, some of the boards or at least work as managers in for certain communities are married to people that are on boards on other HOAs. So there is an enormous amount of
nepotism.
Well, nepotism and then there's probably some other words for it too. Commingling, I think there are some issues too, Sue, that even go beyond the HOAs. We've got a Sugarland City Council member, Mr. Jones, that is an HOA attorney. He's a foreclosure attorney. And he just recently, not in my community, but just recently, I think Missouri City, initiated over 200 foreclosures out of a 700 house community.
Wow.
And it's been, so what I'm saying is it's not just isolated, pocketed HOAs that are cut off from others. It's a situation where they are quite connected and even connected to the city as a whole. And I want to kind of say this too, because this is not insignificant. The city saves money when HOAs assume responsibilities that would otherwise be tax burdens on the city. So instead of raising taxes, which would put elected officials out of a job rather quickly, they allow the HOAs to gain more and more strength and more, responsibility over areas of interest, parks and recreation, roads and so forth. And in that way, the HOAs can raise taxes indefinitely, and we call them dues, annual dues, and we have no say in that. That will happen at their leisure. They will do that, and it's not something that we can stop. Like we could stop, you know, taxes.
Sugar Land, that's a town, or it's a huge HOA?
It's a town. The city of Sugar Land is a town.
Okay. Okay, it's a city. So it's got its own municipal government. For some reason, I thought that it was a huge HOA.
No, this is it. Well, who could say?
Because there are some of them out there. Columbia, Maryland, Reston, Virginia, you know, they're bigger than most cities, but they are, in fact, HOAs.
Well, and our city is separate, technically, or officially. But technically, it's quite mingled with the large HOAs out here.
So it's the city Sugar Land is your third layer of government, and your individual HOAs are your fourth level of government.
Yes, and they are a strong level of government. It's frightening that in Texas we had a law that if you paid your mortgage, no one could foreclose on your property for other types of issues. And it was a level of protection for homeowners. That does not exist within an HOA. And our HOAs, they do target people for multiple reasons. One, they'll certainly target, a troublemaker or someone that's looking to make changes in the HOA that doesn't work for the HOA. They'll target those people first. But the times are tough right now, and the economy's difficult. And they also target minorities who technically or historically don't object and would rather just pay the money than create discord.
Well, the minorities don't know what their rights are. Because if they contact me, they usually tell me that the HOA tells me I have broken a law. And I go, well, the HOA doesn't have any laws, and the HOA cannot enforce the laws. It's not within their jurisdiction. Oh, no, but Sue, you don't understand. It is the law that I have broken. No, you don't understand. There are no laws in HOAs. And they're so afraid that the HOA is going to deport them for having painted their house purple, or whatever the idiotic infraction is allegedly.
Now, Shu, they do have most HOAs will hire what is the word here? It's not the sheriffs, but the constables. And constables deal quite specifically. They can go out of their realm if they choose to, and they do sometimes. But typically, they are a civil law enforcer. They're the ones that that will serve notice for foreclosures and bring civil cases to a JP court.
Constables are something that you guys have in Texas that I'm not aware of anywhere else. I know we don't have them.
Well, let me explain the difference, because this is something that was part of my awakening. We have sheriffs.
Yes.
We have a school police, district police for just the school system.
Right.
We have constables, and we have one more, and I'm trying to think of what that was. But we've broken it down at between four and five law enforcement agencies. The homeowner associations prefer the constables because it streamlines their foreclosure process. It streamlines a number of, certainly their fines and fees and so forth. What they'll advertise is the constables are there to serve the needs of the people and to prevent break-ins and to patrol the area and so forth and keep peace and tranquility in the community. But the opposite is the case. They're there to enforce fines and fees and do foreclosures.
Nancy, let me ask you, who pays these people? Are they on the public payroll or do...
No.
They're rent-a-cops.
The HOA hires them.
So they're rent-a-cops.
And they're beholden. But, they're a little more than... The constables are actually elected by the community to serve the community.
Oh.
But the HOA hires them in addition to that, our contract is not quite $400,000 for next year, but it's a contract that the HOA pays them to service our area.
Wow. So, but they're on. Okay. You talked about the sheriff and you talked about the school police and all of these. All of these are public servants.
Right.
They're sort of paid, hired by the local municipal government or the state government or whichever government.
Right.
And they're paid for out of taxpayer money.
That's right, Sue. And we could hire the sheriff, and it would cost the same, but that would not streamline the civil suits brought against the individuals in the community. Now, here's the thing. Yes, all these are government taxpayer-funded organizations. All of the police, law enforcement agencies that we have are. But in addition to that, we hire them, the HOA hires them to serve our community over and above what our taxes would pay for.
Okay, there are constitutional chains that come attached to any government agency. So the police, for instance, you know, they cannot go beyond the scope of their authority. The rent-a-cops don't, they're private. They're not part of the municipal government. They're not paid for by taxpayer, real legitimate taxpayer money.
But constables are. They are.
So the constables are, and they, are they required to protect your constitutional rights? Or
absolutely, absolutely.
They are. Okay. What happens if you call a constable? Let's say that a board member abuses and harasses you, which we all know that would never happen. But on the off chance that it happened, what would happen if you call the constable?
Well, I would be real honest about this and not shock anyone, okay? If the board member in the board was unhappy with the constables, the constables would lose their contract for the next year. And again, they make close to $400,000 from our community. And so it's very unlikely the constable would, if I brought a constitutional issue and filed a civil suit against, a board member or certainly the board, that those would ever be handled. It because of the cost component, my rights would be grossly ignored.
So they're elected by you to protect the community, but if you need protection, they're sort of looking at lining their own pockets. Got it right?
It's not individually done.
I realize. I understand it's not individually done.
Yeah.
I understand, but I mean big picture here.
Right, right.
And
you have to just have to understand practically that the money is going to speak a lot louder than the rights of an individual.
Oh, absolutely. It always does. It's unbelievable. We're talking to Nancy Henschel. Nancy has a number of houses in HOAs, and it's been a bit of a wake-up call when you moved from the East. Did you have an HOA in, was it Massachusetts, did you say?
Well, no, we didn't. And it was, it was a lovely community. People from all different walks of life, and if you needed a cup of sugar, you walked next door and spoke with your neighbor, and
mm-hmm.
It was, I suppose, we didn't appreciate it or realize how different things could be at the time. And then we moved here, and it was a little unusual.
No sugar, huh?
No, the whole Sugar Land thing is very...
No sugar. No sugar in Sugar Land.
Well, they said originally they named it Sugar Land because we had all the sugar cane fields out here. We grew a lot of sugar cane, and they say that the climate changed. I think the climate changed in that they couldn't hire when they didn't have slaves and they couldn't hire the prisoners for free. And that was the climate that changed. So the Sugar Land left, but we still have the name.
You still have the name, and you can't borrow a cup of sugar. I think there's something really ironic about that one, Nancy.
People are afraid to come out of their house.
I know. And, isn't that amazing?
And they're told, actually, our constables tell us that we don't have to answer the door. And if we don't know the person that's ringing the doorbell, we should just look and wave them away. And people are afraid of each other. They're afraid. Even the neighbors they know, they're afraid because, you don't know, your neighbor might be reporting you to a tax office or reporting you to the HOA. People are afraid.
What a way to live.
Well,
what a sad way to live. I mean, that's a real sad commentary, but you're, of course, absolutely right.
Well, I didn't understand the makeup originally, and then later did discover it, and I feel very foolish that I didn't put the pieces together much earlier.
Well, you were told that, as long as you didn't want to paint your house purple, which... most people, let's be honest, most people don't want to paint their houses purple.
Right.
So it's not a big deal. We were told, gee whiz, so many dollars a month, they will pick up your trash and remove the snow. Having moved from Arizona, I didn't really want to deal with snow.
Right.
And so I said, well, the city in Arizona picked up the trash for our tax dollars. Oh, well, we do things differently here. That's pretty much all we were told.
Right.
And then you get in and you find out, hey, wait a minute, that's not what there is to this.
But, too, also, it grows step by
step. It does.
It's insidious like that.
It is. And the industry has gone in, and they will strut their stuff, and they'll huff, and they'll puff, and they'll just storm and stomp and bounce around, and they'll say, we don't need any legislation, we don't need laws, we'll let the communities govern themselves, but you know what? They're over there with hundreds of pages of, I want, dear Santa, I want, here's a couple of dollars, for your campaign, and so you will do what I want. And they get all these laws passed, and with each successive legislative session, homeowners lose more and more and more power and more authority and more of their property rights.
Yes, they do. And the people that in the community that work for the neighborhood representatives, they're unaware of what's going on too. A lot of them are new people, and some of them are older people. But they are. I get a sense that they're unaware too. Let me give you an example. Our HOA spends more than they take in for the annual dues, and that means they've got to make up the loss.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have the records to see some of this, but I've been trying to get the records, and that's another whole issue. You can't get the records, but the numbers look like to me that they are that. Well, for sure, they are spending more than we're taking in, and this requires us to make money in other areas. We're making money off of foreclosures, and we're making money off of the foreclosure process.
How do we make money off the foreclosures?
Well, let's just start from the beginning.
Are we talking about the bank foreclosures? Because, there's so many of them out there now.
No, these are the HOA foreclosures.
These are the HOA foreclosures,
right.
Okay.
Before it even starts with the foreclosure process, they will... Last year, we've got some more fees involved that we have to pay. For instance, if you have a home office, you have to pay a yearly fee for your home office. Now, what constitutes a home office is difficult. The realtors were off the hook. Their home office doesn't count. But if you babysit, that is a home office, and that does count, that you have to file and pay a fee. Now, the reason for that was that we have a number of real estate agents in the community, and they stepped forward and said, we will not have this. And they said, oh, okay, we'll take you off. But the babysitters have it, and a number of other people with home offices have to pay.
Do they have the authority to charge that? Does it say specifically in the governing documents?
They can create fees for anything they want to, and they do. Now the problem with this as they're writing it up is that the fees, I mean the home office fees, they're also saying when they were writing this up, they were saying, well, you can't have more than seven people go to your house for this home office a day. And then they would say, well, does that mean after 5 o'clock then they can have friends that visit? Or could their friends be mistaken for people visiting for the home office, and how are we going to regulate this? And they finally decided, no, we'll let the board decide on a case-by-case basis. So what that means is the board now has an enormous amount of power just on this one issue with this one fee for home offices. And a number of people don't even realize that that's a new fee. So they can target people, through that vehicle too. But to the foreclosures, before we get to the foreclosures, let me also say, when someone falls behind or loses their job, we've got an unemployment rate here that's gaining in Sugar Land. Although it's one of the least affected areas of the country, we it's not insignificant, and it is growing. So we have some people that are finding it difficult to pay over $1,000 a month now, over $1,000 a year now for the HOA dues, and in addition to all of the additional fees involved. But when they say, look, I need to pay this over time, they work out a deal with the bank. The HOA works out a deal with the bank, and they pay well over 18% interest because they're a little bit in trouble. So they become a money-making venue.
Wow.
For the association. And that money's needed. I mean, we're depending on people running into financial trouble so that we can make money from them. And basing our budget on it, too. I brought up at the association meeting last night, our monthly meeting night before last, that this was not a neighborly thing to do, that we had to do better as a community, and that this was this practice of not helping people in an economy that's not doing well was going to create a vortex that was going to affect us all. And the response that I got was two phases. The first response was very angry, and one of the neighborhood representatives yelled out that if people can't afford to live here, they need to get out.
Jeez.
This is our neighbors. These are our neighbors.
Now you see why I refuse to call them communities.
Well, right, because I mean, imagine living somewhere where if you lose your job and you need at least to stretch out the payments over a period of time, that they're not only going to make money off of you, a lot of it. Your neighbors are going to say, if you can't afford to live here, get the heck out. That's not a community. And I spoke with this gentleman after the board meeting, and he was very angry because he said that he was experiencing financial difficulty, and he had to sell a number of things this year that were precious to him,
mm-hmm.
and that he was angry that other people would take advantage of
yeah.
the situation, and he would be left struggling. So he's got some fears and anxiety, but horribly misplaced. The HOA takes advantage of him, too, and turns him against his neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
I think Stalin did that quite effectively. Perhaps not as effectively as we're doing it.
So, you know, Nancy, what I find interesting is that quite often the people who vote for, who come up with these ideas and fight to install them and to get them to become part of the fabric of the association end up being hoisted by their own petards, because then all of a sudden they find themselves on the receiving end of some of these rules that they wrote, and they're not happy about it.
Yes, but the learning curve is long, and
it's common sense, you know. Yeah. You do that, you might be in that position. Did you ever think about that? No,
right.
Not me.
So, Shu, is it an issue of a lack of empathy? Because I used that word the other night. If we don't have empathy for our neighbors in a time of crisis like this, we may find ourselves shortly in their position, too. I mean, this is my selfish way of expressing empathy. I might be involved, you know. I'm empathetic because I could be next, and I would appreciate if my neighbors would treat me in a way that, you know, I could pull myself up.
I was talking to someone who in Florida who said that Jan Bergman, who is president of Cyber Citizens for Justice, and he's doing a great job down there, by the way, and people call him. And they have all sorts of questions for him. And he told, this one guy called and said, this is what we want to do. How do we do it? And Jan says, you don't want to do that, because if you do, here's what's going to happen. And no. So this guy happened to be president of his condo, and he pushed and he pushed, and he got legislation passed. He got, you know, the governing documents changed. He got things exactly the way he wanted to have them. And then he was no longer president. And then he had some health problems. And then his neighbors foreclosed on him thanks to the laws and the amendments that he had fought so hard to pass. And he called Jan, please help me. Jan said, you know, I told you this would happen. Yeah, I know. He lost his home. The guy lost his home. I mean, that's the ultimate price to pay for being so pig-headed and so stupid. And I'm sorry, there's no other way of putting it.
Yeah, you know, empathy isn't some liberal, wishy-washy way to run business. I think empathy is something that if you treat your neighbor the way you expect to be treated, things will go well. I think the ancients probably knew that.
Yeah, to one to others, right?
Right. And
I've seen so many incidents where people have done stupid things. I mean, in my own association, you know, one board member just pushed and pushed and pushed, and we don't care, you know, it makes more sense than the governing documents, blah, blah. Her son ended up being caught in that situation, and it cost her a lot of money to bail him out financially. And it was because of her. Well, you can't do that, Shu, right? We told you that. You know, you didn't listen. You know, now you pay up.
There has to be a structure and a check and balance on this, too. And that can't happen without transparency. There's got to be, we've got to have open records and open meetings. One of the things our HOA does, the one that I live in, does is they do have relatively open meetings, or at least their board meetings are open. But if you have a complaint and you call them and you're very angry, or even if you're not very angry, but if you have a complaint, they schedule you after the meeting for a private meeting. Now, they do this, they say they do this to keep you from being embarrassed at the public meeting, all right, because they're all of a sudden very concerned about being embarrassed. But no, what they do is they isolate people so mm-hmm. that they don't recognize that the problems that they're having belong to the whole community and everyone is suffering from similar problems.
Just tell them it's past your bedtime, you want it early, and you want it in front of everyone.
In front of everybody. And,
yeah.
But the problem is people go, oh, well, that's good of them because I really didn't want to, you know, make this so public. I just wanted to solve this little problem that I've got.
I tell people,
everybody has it.
I tell people, if you're going in front of the board, insist that it be open and insist that everybody knows about it. And if you have to go stand in the street and drag total strangers in there, because what happens when you go in, you've got however many board members, 5, 7, 9, plus the attorney, plus the manager, plus the recording secretary, they're all sitting on one side of the table. And you're sitting on the other side on your own.
Right.
And that's intimidating. So if you've got a room full of people that are sitting on your side of the table,
right,
then it's going to even things out a little bit. And, you know, I've gone to people's other meetings and sat there, and I've had the attorney kind of look at me like, what are you doing here? I know you don't belong here. And I've just dragged people in when anybody, you know, when anybody's been hoisted in front of some Mickey Mouse kangaroo court tribunal. In my association, I've always said, take everybody with you.
That is truly the best advice.
And just go. And the reason I'm telling you this now is in case anybody's listening, don't let them fool you by saying we don't want to embarrass you. What they want to do is intimidate you.
Well, intimidate, but also keep other people from recognizing that these issues belong to everybody. That, let's give you a silly example. We've got these picket fences. They're cheap wooden fences. I mean, they're fences. What can I say? over time, they get mildewed, and they need to either be pressure washed or stained or both or something. But people don't. And what they'd like to do is, you know, just stain them in a cedar stain that all, you know, at least have their whole yard the same color, you know, the fence the same color. But the HOA refuses to allow that. And over time, you have to replace the pickets, and now your fence looks a little striped, you know. But you can't do anything about it because the association will not allow it. And, gosh, my neighbor pressure washed theirs and then stained it a nice light cedar that would have looked like it was brand new. And they went in and made them pay hundreds of dollars to have it pressure washed. And when the pressure washing was done, it looked horrible. But they were satisfied with that because it was a control issue.
Yeah, and you're right. It is a control issue.
And I've just forgotten where I was going with that story.
you know it, but what you did was you reminded me. Because yesterday when we were talking, you said that there's a problem with water. And you're supposed to be, there's a bit of a drought going on.
Right.
And the association's insisting that you water your lawn, and the local municipal government is saying, hey, you know, we want you to conserve water. But associations typically are not necessarily good for the community at large.
I went to a city council meeting yesterday, and the city of Sugar Land won an award for they won an award for their plans to conserve water in the future. very amazing.
Oh, good.
But here we have 90%, roughly 90% of the homes in Sugar Land are in homeowner associations. The homeowner association rules require green grass, and they will come around if your grass isn't completely uniformly green, and they will fine you. You must water it during, and we had one of the worst droughts we've ever had this summer. I got cited in not the homeowner association I live in, but in another one, and I'm by those houses a couple of times a week. They're close by,
mm-hmm.
And the yard was pretty green. We were watering it off and on, but it was pretty green. I'm really ashamed to say that. But we got cited because there were some weeds that were replacing some of the grass that wasn't holding on as well because of the drought. And we got cited for that.
Decided because the weeds weren't doing so well.
Well, it was astonishing, and I know I wasn't the only one. I know they probably cited me because they knew that I've been leasing that property out for 6 years now, and they even though I've been for 6 years, and they probably thought that maybe I don't live in town, or it may have been a low-hanging fruit. They thought I was a low-hanging fruit that would just pay the fine and not you know, that I didn't know really how the property looked, because I don't go over there. I certainly do, though. I'm sure they're doing that to a number of people, citing them and fining them for, their lawns during in the middle of a drought. And yet the city of Sugar Land wins awards for their plans to save water in the future. It's
mind-boggling, isn't it?
It's twisted. It's so twisted. And it could be so easily changed.
I don't think that you can fix HOAs. I think that there's such a flawed concept that the only way to be rid of them is to literally be rid of them.
You just
can't, because you're dealing with human nature. Human nature, somehow, for some reason, people like being bullies, and they like throwing their weight around, and they like feeling important and put in a position of power instead of a position of service, which is what being on the board is all about. You know, they're going to start abusing that power.
You have summed it up perfectly.
And it's not going to work. It's just not going to work. I don't care. You can do all the legislation you want. Guys, there's nothing in it for you. Trust me, there's nothing in it for you. I've been doing this for over 20 years. I haven't found a damn thing in there for the homeowners.
Well, not for the homeowners, but let me tell you, we've got our board members, a number of the board members have acquired very lucrative contracts with the association. Although the board, being a member of the board, doesn't pay except your sense of bloated sense of ego and power, it certainly does pay, because we've given computer contracts. The twin brother of the constable, Troy Nels' twin brother, was on the board when Troy Nels won the security contract for the community. And that's been very lucrative for him.
Oh, yeah. And contractors will come in and they'll say, you know, we'll throw in a new roof for you if you give us the contract for this. And board members will take it. Again, we're getting back to human nature.
Well, it's interesting. I just discovered this year. The IRS is making the homeowner associations, I don't know if it's nationwide, but certainly in Texas, making them create three things. One is, how long are they keeping their record-keeping policy? A whistleblower policy, making them develop a whistleblower policy, as well as, let me see, whistleblower policy, ethics policy. Now, the ethics policy is very interesting. They worked for weeks on coming up with an ethics policy. I'm surprised they even have one. But one of the real problems was gifts. What ceiling were they going to put on the gifts that they received, the board members received? And they finally came up with a gift that you could not give a board member more than $70. Of course, the big question is that $70 a minute or $70 a year or $70 for what? Excuse me, for what?
A lifetime.
They probably limited it to $70 a minute for some of their vendors.
I have not heard this. This is really interesting. I mean, if it's an IRS policy, then it's going to have to be, I would assume, nationwide.
Well, I think it's a good step in the right direction, because that means, well, I mean, a couple of members of our board, ethics. What is that? I thought that was so ironic.
Yeah. They didn't know what ethics was, huh?
Didn't really have a clear, and still don't have a real clear picture of that.
That's okay. CII doesn't know. They've got an ethics, they've got their ethics policy or whatever it is, and buried in there someplace it says that in order to have CAI designation, it is unethical not to be a member of CAI.
Well, there you go.
And so Tom Skiba and I had to go around, oh, shoot, you don't know what you're talking about. And he says, we don't have such a policy. And I said, oh, Tom, they buried it in your ethics policy. No wonder you don't know about it.
Wow. It really is. It's
scary, isn't it?
Well, you know, and I, you know, we were talking earlier about, you know, took a trip to Arizona and was having such a good time meeting all my neighbors again and sharing different ideas about how to control the weeds here, what was going on with whose family there, and, you know, just, you know, when you're working in the front yard, people stop and talk, and it's a good community. It's a nice community.
No HOA there, right?
Right, no HOA. The developer tried to get an HOA started after he had sold a number of houses, and the people, because they're a little bit older population, a little bit more educated, I guess, stopped him in his tracks very quickly.
Cool.
And then as time went on, now the community prospers better than others in the area, even with this economic downturn, because realtors advertise the area as a home, an HOA free community.
Oh, I know. Isn't it neat when you see those ads?
Well, and because they're so accurate.
Yeah.
It was just a breath of fresh air for me to go there and spend 2 weeks. And now that I've come back, I kind of feel the difference, the real difference. But we don't have much of a choice in Sugar Land. 90% of the houses, if not more, are run by HOAs.
I got a call from Thierry Bolognese last night. He was one of these town hall meetings by telephone. And so I thought, well, all right, I'd listen to him. And, you know, you could hit zero and get in line to ask a question. I asked him he's a candidate for delegate in my area. And I asked him, I said, what are your feelings about HOAs? And he goes, excellent question. You're going to get me in trouble. And he didn't know. I mean, he says, well, there's some good ones and there's some bad ones. And he says, but as a delegate down in Richmond, I probably won't have anything to do with them at all. It's not my, I can't really comment. I mean, you know, the ignorance is just overwhelming.
I think he knew that he would be dealing with them. It's a very interesting, what they call it here, they call it a good old boy network. But it's not just a network. It's a very interesting system. You can actually go and find out with your elected officials who donates to whose campaign.
Oh yeah.
And that's something that you can ask and receive that information, and go over it. You know, I mean, I have done this and look at the details of that. And
find out how they vote.
It is. Absolutely predictable, surprising, and they're all, many of them, I mean, most assuredly, they deal very, very closely with the HOAs. I mean, it is, I'm going to go out on a limb here, Shu, it is a part of our government that is allowed to operate under the radar.
One of the candidates for Attorney General, Ken Cuccinelli, here in Virginia, has gone out on a limb and said that any agency that deals with consumer protection has got to come under the Attorney General's office. And I kind of like that. I need to follow up and find, I mean, he's got that right on his website. I need to find out if that includes HOAs, because typically what happens is they go through the real estate board, and CAI gets into bed with the real estate people, and they co-write all these wish lists, and they get all these things. And it's carte blanche. I mean, they can do pretty much anything they want. They have extra charges. They have extra funds. They have all of this stuff that it's just being siphoned off by the industry, and it's going through the regular government. So if the Attorney General wants to take that on, I think, hey, I will dedicate 3 shows to Ken Cuccinelli if he includes HOAs on that.
That would be miraculous.
Maybe he'd be a model for the rest of the country.
Yes. Gosh, I'm not sure how that would work here.
We're believe it or not, we're going to start running a little bit short of time here. There are a couple of things that I really wanted to
touch on before we did run out of time, and one of them was your outstanding website. Would you give us the URL and let people know how they can get to it?
Well, thank you. It's newterritorysentinel.com. www.newterritorysentinel.com.
And you have a whole lot of stuff on there.
Well, everything is a link. Just click on anything and everything, and it's going to be a link. And some of them are cute. It's more than cute. Poignant, I hope. YouTube connections and a lot of good advice, too, especially on the front page. The big orange splot is one of them.
That's what I wanted to talk about next.
All right. It's a child's book, and it's read on YouTube. It's and it's read by two kids. You're adorable. But like a lot of children's books, Shu, this has a very important and powerful component. And I think, personally, I think it's an anti-CIA book, and certainly, you know, an anti-fascism book. I think it's very powerful, but a lovely read.
The book has to do with a street where all the houses look exactly alike, and then you have this bird that drops an orange paint can. It's carrying an orange paint can over somebody's house, and has this big orange splot on the roof.
Right, and then people come to to the gentleman, and they say, "Yeah, you've got to do something about this. It makes our neighborhood not orderly. It's not right." He decides, well, he will paint, but he paints all around in a way that, his home then is a part of him, it expresses him. And then other people come to complain to him that, oh, no, you've got, and then he sits down and talks with them, and then they go home and they make their homes a part of their unique self. And I think if you were applying that to my HOAs or where I live in Sugar Land, that might mean that someone would say, you know, it's ridiculous for me to harvest this grass in my front yard every week. That needs to stop. I need to plant buffalo grass. I need to plant native plants that don't need as much water, and it could be just as beautiful, and I would be free of harvesting something that was filling landfills. It would be an expression of my environmental consciousness and my community-minded spirit, and as well as my individual self-expression. But we've got to work so that can happen.
What I liked about the book, and I think the message and the lesson basically, is that they took this street of, you know, identical cookie-cutter houses. And one guy just went a little bit over the top. It started with the orange splotch, and then he painted the front of the house and the roof, and he added, you know, all kinds of colors. And then he shows up, and I don't know where the house was, but he shows up with palm trees and alligators and a hammock, and he just lays in the hammock. And then you look down the street, and here's this one house that looks unbelievable, and all the rest of them are pretty much the same. And slowly, it takes one person. Don't ever underestimate the power of one person, what one person can do. Once you get something like that started in this book, what happened is that the neighbor came and decided, hey, you know what, I love ships. So his house turned into a ship. And pretty soon you had every different conceivable house on the street, and not one of them looked like it did before, right?
Right. Listen, people need to go on the website and click in the middle of the front page, the big orange spot, and it's YouTube. Two kids will read the story and turn the pages, and it is just lovely.
And the book is still available, is it?
Yes, it is. I bought 10 of them. I'm going to give them to each member of the board.
Where did you get them from?
Well, I went to the local bookstore.
And they have them in stock in the bookstore?
No, I had to order them.
You had to order them?
I did.
So the book is called The Big Orange Spot. And if you have small kids, and even if you have big kids, it's a good book to give them, right?
I think so. If you've got an HOA with board members or even a manager, you know, I think I paid $10 a piece, maybe less. You know, there are worse ways of spending the money.
That's true. That's really true. And so what got you started? Why did you set up the website? And like I said, I think it's an excellent website. There's a lot of really good information there. So go check it out. It's newterritorysentinel.com, right?
Yes, newterritorysentinel.com.
Why the New Territory? What's
Well, that's the name of my the community that I live in. It's New Territory Residential Construction Residential. Let me go back.
Community Association.
That's right, New Territory Residential Community Association, and I thought that you know, they've got their own website, which it's just so Stepford Wife-ish like. It's you know, that's an old movie, but one that pretty much sums it up too. I felt like they needed another form of news that said more about what our association is doing. And I'll be honest with you, Shu, I've been a little nervous to point out, you know, some very specifics really specific violations and so forth, because our elected officials and our sheriff's department, certainly the constable's department, are so integrally connected that I've been a little afraid to be right out there with that. So I've used situations from all over the country, but it's the same situation. This is not a new story. It's the same situation repeated, you know, really everywhere.
Oh, absolutely. I hear from people, you know, I'll go out and talk to people or I'll give speeches around the area, and people will come up to me and they'll say, "Shu, you don't mean all associations. You mean some associations, right?" And I go, "No, I mean all associations." "Well, Shu, you don't understand. You see, my association's not like that." I go, "Where do you live?" And they tell me. And if it's a local one, which usually it is since I do a lot of my speaking locally, I'll say, "But, you know, you were just in the news 2 weeks ago." Yeah, I know, but my association doesn't do that." And I go, "But it's funny because I heard from some of your neighbors." "Yeah, I know, Shu. The people down the street had some problems and there was, you know, someone around the corner. But, Shu, you don't understand. My association doesn't do that."
Well, the Nile isn't just a river in Africa.
And you know, what does it take to knock some sense into these people?
Well, it does take a wake up.
But anyway, Nancy, thank you so much. I know you've got a very busy life, and I appreciate the fact that you took time out on a very, you know, very short notice.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure. And I will be teaching tomorrow night a course in homeowner association reform. And I've got a number of people signed up. Unfortunately, also a number of CAI people have decided to sign up as well. Wish me luck.
Do you record these?
I think I might.
Take a tape record. I would love to hear it. I would really, really love to hear it. Good luck with that.
Thank you.
And again, thank you so much for joining us, Nancy Henscheler. And from Sugarland, Texas, where there really is no sugar, believe it or not. Can you believe that?
It's my pleasure.
Thank you for joining us today. Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.